Hello, and welcome to the review here on Monocle 24 with me, Tyler Brulé, and Gillian Dubias.
Ahead over the next hour, photojournalist Zed Nelson will be here for our weekend magazine review.
And we'll also be heading to Denmark to see what's happening with the music scene there.
And we'll be combing through the book stacks of some of our favourite shops around the world. Today we travel to Shanghai, Berlin and Los Angeles to hear what the booksellers are saying.
Number one bestseller, I think, for everyone is Haruki Murakami's book 1Q84, a play on 1984. It's a very important novel.
That was a little something from a bookshop in Los Angeles. All that and much more here today on The Review on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Studio One here at Midori House, where we're easing into the weekend, aren't we, Gillian?
We are, but what, no dog, Tyler?
There's no dog. I know, there was much excitement in the office yesterday afternoon with that beagle on Andrew's show.
I know, and we're still now trying to work out what is the best office dog for Midori House.
I know.
So that's the office game.
There's a bit of a competition. Andrew needs to get a new dog. I've been thinking about getting a dog. And I there's probably a lot of sponsorship money also in having our own pet program, I think, as well.
Oh, well, there you go.
What do you have lined up for the weekend?
I think actually this weekend's going to be a bit of a print-free one. I'm going to head back to Bermondsey. I'm going to go to Bermondsey and go to the visit and spend more time in the White Cube Bermondsey there, because it's a huge, vast space, and it's the third addition to their gallery stable.
That's, yeah, as you said, it's the third. And when I, a new film went up yesterday evening, mm-hmm. correct?
A
little tour. Your sort of alternative tour to post-Freeze Art Fair.
Well, I know art fairs are really important, but personally, I'm not a fan of them. I think in the tent, it makes it feel like art is a commodity. And I like the bricks and mortar of a gallery space.
Right.
I really enjoy it. So I decided to step away from the tents and the fair and go and look at the galleries emerging, reopening, launching, which kind of shows a kind of vibrant side of the sector here in London.
So you looked at the new Haunch of Venison, which has gone back to its original space,
which looked amazing. To its original space. And it really does show there was a party for Freeze, and it just showed how the right space is so conducive to getting the people into a gallery and then looking at, observing and talking about art and probably buying art, I would say.
It also looked I think it was Annabelle Seldorf was the architect who did
and a beautiful job. I mean, that building has a great history. I think it was once a stable, it was a townhouse, and it's that right mix of making something old, contemporary, but still with the echoes of what it was, which I think suits art perfectly.
Right. So no print in your weekend at all?
No, music, film, walking.
Don't even talk about it. I haven't been to a movie. I don't know how long. It's just, I been staying, but there might be movie tonight. I'm going to, as soon as we're out of studio and in a couple of hours, I'm flying to Tokyo. So I'm looking forward to
How many hours do you have of movie watching?
it's 11 hours to Tokyo, but I think that normally involves dinner and a couple of glasses, and then I pass out until we're on approach into Tokyo. And I'm looking forward to 4 days there and then back here by Thursday, which is good.
You're listening to The Review on Monocle 24. In a moment, we hear from independent bookshops about the fiction and non-fiction titles appealing to their customers after this short break.
And you are back with us here on Monocle 24 for The Review. Well, now the weekend wouldn't be complete around Midori House without a stroll over to Daunt Books to see what their buyers are suggesting for a cozy autumn read. To take it out of the neighborhood, every week we go global and we talk to various editors around the world and to see what is happening at bookshops.
This week we sent our correspondents to their locals in Shanghai. We sent them to Berlin and also to Los Angeles. And we start our tour in Shanghai with Justin Bergman, who visited Garden Books.
My name is Chen Weiye. Work here in Garden Books Shanghai. This week top sale is two titles. One is 1Q84 and the other one is Steve Jobs' autobiography. Because maybe the Apple... from Apple, a lot of fans, or the Jobs is very famous in Shanghai, in China, and a lot of background on the other media. So the books sells very good here. And the other way, the publisher house, shipped the book to Shanghai at the same times or before the times of the sale days. I got this book already. As you know, I cannot sell until October 24, the sale was a local edition, same times in market. I got information from publisher house the English version sell here, like from UK and US, and more than 10,000 copies. Other titles sell here, I think maybe two. One is Country Driver, and the other one is Factory Girl. These two titles, SM, like, as you know, now in China, the harmony is number one thing for government and the people to talking. So this book is let you know what's the low level people, they from countryside to Shanghai to big city, how to live, how to work, how to health, what's the food for them. So this book now is very popular. A lot of people interested to read it.
That was bookseller Chen Wei Ye of Garden Books, which is in the French concession, or former French concession, in Shanghai. And it's actually one of the few English independent bookstores. Always a challenge in China, because I'm not even sure how independent you can really be. I was in Paris earlier in the week. I heard this remarkable story about, I was talking to someone from PPR, the owners of Gucci, and they said that Gucci, they did this anniversary book, which they put in stores all over the world. But they weren't allowed to sell a book about their business in China because the store didn't have a permit to sell books.
Unbelievable. Well, one of the things that I wanted to do when I was in China and Shanghai and didn't get a chance, but was the old bookstores and the old book markets, because they have quite a booky culture there. And I think that's where you'd find some of the real discoveries, going into those old secondhand vintage bookstores, because I don't think the officials have gone really there.
No. And of course, they're looking for what's coming into the country now. But I mean, it's amazing. I mean, something as harmless as a Gucci book, but just because you didn't have a license and you hadn't been... Yeah, you're not permitted by whatever, I'm sure there's probably many ministries that overlook that in China. So interesting nonetheless. Up next, we're going to a favorite bookstore in Los Angeles. I'm sure, Jillian, you must know Book Soup as well, which is brilliant.
Favorite time to go there is always Oscar time, because more than the books, it's always interesting to just eavesdrop the conversations that are going on, the screenwriters and the directors. So, it's always a stop when I go to LA.
Great. Let's have a listen.
My name is Tosh Berman. I am the book buyer for Book Soup, and we're a bookstore located in Los Angeles on the Sunset Strip. We've been here about over 35 years. A lot of people who come through Book Soup always makes them feel like their bookstore back home. There's a lot of great humor in what we do and stuff. So the humor mixed with the seriousness makes Book Soup a very unique place. For this week, The Doors by Grell Marcus has been remarkably selling well. Marcus is a critical writer who writes mostly about Bob Dylan in the past and the band, a very Americana taste, but also goes into European music. And it's unusual for him to be focused on a band like The Doors, who were the ultimate Los Angeles iconic rock band. Another big book this week, and this came out this week, is a book on Sal Bass called Sal Bass, A Life in Film and Design. And Bass did a lot of the titles for the Alfred Hitchcock films. And if you're a hardcore film fan, Sal Bass is it. Number one bestseller, I think, for everyone is Haruki Murakami's book, 1Q84, a play on 1984. It's a very important novel. Books that are featured prominently in our store is the everlasting, always fascinating icon, Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs gave full access to his life, to his friends, to his world for this book to be done. And the great thing is that Jobs refused to have any authorized editing afterwards. One book that's been going for a year strongly, like if it's a new release, like it got reviewed yesterday, like it won the Booker yesterday, is Patti Smith's This Kids. People cannot get enough of that book. The story she tells and her feelings about Robert Mapplethorpe, her main lover at the time, I think had a profound effect on readers.
And that was Tosh Berman, who is at Book Soup in Los Angeles. He also sounded like he was in Shanghai. I'm not sure. Anyway, but I also like, for people who don't know the store, one of the great things is also this wonderful outdoor magazine section. And they've got a great little combo going. And in a city which, of course, was completely overrun by too many mega bookstores, when Borders is gone. Sort of too many mega chain bookstores. It's great that they've held on. As you said, when you're there too, you always spot some pretty interesting people in that store.
And they are writing scripts on the back of napkins.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's quite heady.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, now finally, we're going to go to Germany. We're going to go to Berlin for Henschel Bookshop.
My name is Sadi Bachmann, and I work in the middle of Berlin, in the bookshop from Mrs. Herschel. And we have a kind selection of the best novels. You know, Haruki Murakami, or the new of Oda From, you knew from Jeffrey Eugenides. And once in a month we have a poet who read in the bookshop. We have much German authors like Christoph Hein, or from Eastern Europe like Miljenko Jagovic, but also the American like Americans like Philip Roth or D.C. Boyle, something like this. Now window we have the new paperbacks of the month, and also the novels, just like this from Eugen Ruge. He have won the German Book Prize. Eugen Ruge, sell out, I think, but it's the most popular. Yes, he's in the last 3 months, I think, he's very popular because of this prize.
And that was Harry Bachmann from the Herschel Bookshop in Berlin. I wouldn't mind also a weekend in Berlin, have not been for ever.
I know. We did a film in Berlin, and we're sending Kamal, or we're not sending, he's asked for our advice about the Prinzessengarten, the urban farm there.
Right.
So our good friend Kamal took inspiration from our film and wants to
Kamal
talk
Muzawak
about it.
Kamal Muzawak of Talley fame.
Yeah, so he's there this weekend,
right,
as we speak.
Just to look at the at what
he's,
they've done.
He's doing a number of things there, but one of the things he wanted to do is talk to them about what they did and how they took old space and turned it into an urban farm, and one that can be transported around the city depending on when free lots are available. So he thought that was quite a cool idea.
We should probably move a little bit west and north from Berlin. We're going to be heading to Denmark in a moment for the reviews, look at what's happening in music from Copenhagen and beyond. This is The Review on Monocle 24. We're back after this.
J. Crew is thrilled to be shipping across the pond to our customers in the UK. Shop our famous collection of colourful cashmere and wardrobe staples for men, women and children. At J.Crew, you can always expect impeccable quality, design integrity, and flawless customer service every time you shop. Visit jcrew.com for the full story.
Londonból ez a Monocle 24.
Aus London, das ist Monocle 24.
De Londres, ez a Monocle 24.
De Londres. Este es Monocle 24.
London kala, Monocle 24 desu.
De Londres, este é Monocle 24.
Londonist, sino Monocle 24.
Από το Λονδίνο, αυτό είναι το Monocle 24.
Λοντόστα, τέμα on Monocle 24.
Λόντζαδαν, βουρσε Monocle 24.
London kala, Monocle 24.
And you are back with the Monocle Review here from Studio One in London, where it's just about 18 minutes past the hour in London, which means it's 21:18 in Seoul and 13:18 in Kinshasa. And if you want to know what time it is in Bogota, it's just 18 minutes after 7 o'clock in the morning. Just going back to what we were saying a little bit earlier about Berlin as well, when we were talking to Marcus Albers earlier in the week, there was a really interesting story. He was talking about one of the major publishing companies there are starting almost a microfund to encourage small businesses, meaning small media businesses, to just sort of kickstart creativity there, which is quite interesting, I thought.
Well, hopefully then I can return with my film crew and get our little small business.
But it's interesting when you hear stories like that, because you think that once they do it, then you'd have other publishers in other cities, who might be doing the same as well.
And who are the people who are involved in the microfund?
The company that's kicking it off is Springer. But the interesting thing is then you think, well, what's going to happen in Hamburg? Then is Gunnar and Jahr do it? Is Berta, Berta being another big player, in Munich? Do they they do the same. So it's interesting to watch.
That's what I always love about Germany, though. They have these cities that kind of compete with each other.
Absolutely. And also that there's also serious media players in all of those cities, you know, who also, you know, perform in the same way that they, yes, they're national brands, but, you know, their fiefdoms, you know, are whatever city that they happen to be headquartered in. And you know, and that, you know, you're not just talking about are these web startups, but, you know, do people want to start publishing in prints? Do they want to start, you know, new magazine businesses? And it's fascinating to hear.
Did Marcus say, was there a sense of a certain niche business now that people are trying to kind of get their hands on?
No, but I think it's, you know, it is that wonderful thing, you know, because in Berlin, you know, you could sort of argue maybe you don't even need these types of startup funds because, you know, the rent is so cheap and, you know, the cost of living is incredibly low. And I think, you know, that's part of the dynamism, you know, of the city as well. We should we should probably jump over to Copenhagen from Berlin, though.
Well, Denmark has emerged as one of Europe's more vibrant music scenes with its mix of dance, jazz, and indie acts. You just have to look at the stack of CDs on our culture editor's desk. For more on the evolution of the scene, we're joined now by Klaus Pedersen, who is A&R manager at Universal Music in Denmark. Hello, Klaus.
Hello.
I want to get a sense. I think you're just returning from London back to Copenhagen. But can you give us a sense about the kind of music that's exciting you at the moment back in your home country?
I mean, I think we have a great wealth of talent in most of the genres, really. What is really on the move just now is the indie scene. It's indie pop, indie rock, you know, edgy. It's in Danish language. Most part of it is actually in Danish language because that's gaining a lot of support from especially national radio P3 to discover new young bands. It's great at the moment.
Klaus, I just wanted to ask you, when you mentioned Denmark's radio P3 and I'm, you know, obviously you're, you know, mostly looking at your own market, but when you survey the music scene and certainly the radio scene across Europe and the rest of the world, do you think that there is still an importance that, you know, that there is, you know, state radio is backing and almost sort of demanding that national acts are played, because if it was just up to the commercial stations, would there be a concern that, you know, they would only sort of be looking to playing, you know, UK acts, you know, US acts and only major Danish acts?
Yeah. I mean, that is definitely, you know, the current state of the radio climate, I believe, in Denmark and probably also in the rest of Europe. But, you know, commercial stations tend to play top 40 only. And as you say, you know, big Danish acts and you know, the top UK and US acts, where also, as you say, P3, well, they have, you know, it's a demand that they discover new bands, they support them in the long run as well, you know, that they have different award shows where they can award them and, you know, support them in that way. And, you know, one of the bands that we're going to hear later on is called I Got You on Tape, and they were supported by P3, awarded, you know, one of the new bands to look after, and, you know, they won a prize where they could, you know, go into the studio and record an even better album than the first one. So yeah, it's very important for us to have you know, national radio support it, you know, and discover it, and then commercial stations and, you know, in the way they can support, you know, if they can support some of the rock stuff to broaden it out to the Danish people.
I wonder if you can maybe tell us a little bit about the energy of the music scene and maybe how important Danish festivals, music festivals are. What kind of festivals do you have there?
I would like to point out two festivals that actually is a key to, you know, creating a career. And the first one is called Spot Festival in the town of Aarhus in Jutland. It's in June every year, and they have, I think they have a couple of hundred different bands from all over Scandinavia, especially Denmark. Unsigned acts, some are signed, but unsigned acts where you can, you know, go from scene to scene, sort of like South by Southwest before it got really commercial. It's a great festival, and it is actually combined with the other festival, which is Roskilde Festival, very well known across Europe. And the rest of the world, and that they tend to have different scenes and stages on the festival where they also put on-site acts on such a big festival, which is quite unique, I think. And actually, you can have bands running from, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday until the festival itself starts on the Thursday. Then you have the chance to go down and see, you know, undiscovered music, unsigned acts, and that's very good for us.
You mentioned, Klaus, I got you on tape, and I thought we should have a little listen to it. The track is called Run from the Rain. And that was I Got You on Tape, and the song was Run from the Rain. We've been talking to Klaus Pedersen, who's still on the line. Hello, Klaus.
Hello.
Just tell us, in terms of how they've done, and it's got sort of a bit of a nice sort of indie sort of mellow tone to it. I'm wondering, our culture editor Rob Bound, as I was saying in the intro, has been playing a lot of things from Denmark. Just Julie and I were chatting earlier. Why the sudden surge? I mean, Does a country like Denmark, suddenly sort of start to rise to the top of the stakes as well? Because the social conditions of Denmark, a generally equal society, still pretty decent funding for the arts. Does that help promote an environment for people to to be in their basements or be in studios and create good music?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely been a change over the last 3 to 5 years from, both the government, but also, in a sense, the professional approach from bands and management and, upcoming artists themselves, both having international approach and international focus, travel to live abroad and work with their music and their talent, elsewhere than Denmark, and just pick up the vibe from the country they're in and the culture, and then the government also has support systems for bands traveling to promote and play live elsewhere and to record their albums, and we have songwriting educations, we have music management educations, so in a sense as a whole you would say that the whole music industry is gearing up, professionally.
Klaus, I was curious, is there a lot of rivalry between the different Scandinavian countries, and is the Danish sound distinctive from the Swedish, say?
I wouldn't say there is rivalry. I mean, we have, in a sense you can say with the penetration of smartphones and broadband connections and the internet, obviously music travels fast, with Spotify in Sweden being a huge success and just opened in Denmark 2 or 3 weeks ago, we have great hopes that it could change, something in our country as well. But I wouldn't say we rival each other any longer. I mean, that's history now. And we try to, benefit from each other's talent and just create the best. And, if you look at Scandinavia as a whole, there's probably, it's more unique for the three countries to work together and then make a stronger story out of Scandinavia and just Denmark isolated to create a Danish story that could be, a bit tougher to tell to the rest of the world, where a Scandinavian result is something that, both, English and American music people would look at.
Mm. We're going to hear another song. This is Darkness Falls. They've got a song. Maybe you could set it up for us a little bit. Tell us about Darkness Falls. And the song we're going to listen to is called Noise on the Line. But who are they, and where would they sort of sit within the Danish scene?
Yeah. I mean, Darkness Falls is a fairly new duo, rock duo, edgy indie pop, released this debut album recently in October, and we think it's a very, very nice duo, and they have the thing going on, and they could probably make it outside of Denmark as well, and I believe they already have fairly good attention from Monocle Radio as well, so yeah.
Well,
I'm very excited with it.
We're gonna let you go, and we're gonna hear the song, but to have a very good weekend, Klaus.
And you too.
Thank you. We're going to listen to Darkness Falls. The song is Noise on the Line. And that was Darkness Falls with Noise on the Line. And there was a little suggestion by Klaus Pedersen, who we were chatting to earlier, the A&R manager for Universal Music in Denmark. We're going away for a short break. This is the review on Monocle 24. Back in a moment.
J. Crew is thrilled to be shipping across the pond to our customers in the UK. Shop our famous collection of colourful cashmere and wardrobe staples for men, women and children. At J.Crew, you can always expect impeccable quality, design integrity and flawless customer service every time you shop. Visit jcrew.com for the full story.
Every week, Monocle's Jonathan Openshaw takes a look at the inspirational people behind some of the world's most fascinating businesses. We'll find out what they've learned from their triumphs and mistakes, how they manage their time, and what drives them on to success. No bulls or bears, just real people, real businesses, and real stories. That's The Entrepreneurs, presented in association with Pictet, premiering every Wednesday at 1900 London time, here on Monocle 24. And also available on our Timeshift player at monocle.com and via iTunes.
And you're back with the Monocle Review with Tyler Brulé and Gillian DeBias here in Studio One at Midori House. Well, it's magazine review time. And we're joined by, well, I was going to say just photojournalist, but not, but also very good friend Zed Nelson. And we offered Zed to, you know, to come up with a stack for you, but you protested and you said you're going to bring your own stack. So what have you got in the pile for us today?
I've got a varied sort of number of magazines here. I mean, it's difficult. I kind of went into a weird state of trying to work out what makes a good magazine. So the last 24 hours, I've kind of really questioned what I like.
You only just questioned that in the last day.
Well, I always question it, but I really put it to the test. Yeah. And I was scared of doing this program because there's lots of magazines I don't like, and I find I love magazines as a starting point, but I often find myself at airports sort of with 10 minutes to make a decision, frantically trying to work out what to buy for a long flight.
So what do you buy for a long flight before we get to the pile you've got there?
I mean, there's always the staples, you know, like sort of Vanity Fair and people like that, who you can kind of just guarantee that there'll be something in it to read. But the more interesting magazines, I think, are the sort of, they're slightly more sort of arty, photography-based fashion. They're all, you know, and they seem to be getting bigger and bigger in size and number as well. I mean, it's kind of terrifying. I was at a store yesterday just looking at the stack of them.
Yeah, I sort of wonder whether it'd be interesting to talk to the news trade. I mean, I do get the sense that there are more titles which are, you know, as you said, slightly arty, photo-based, you know, maybe not so text-heavy, but just, you know, a celebration of imagery. I think much more than when you and I were working together, you know, 20-odd years ago.
True. But when you actually really start looking at them, there aren't that many good ones.
No.
And that's when it gets interesting. And some of them are actually almost offensive. You know, you pick them up and the size and the weight of them, it's almost, my first impulse is to close it and walk away. And that's interesting. So the good ones sort of invite you in. And they said, for me, they tend to be the slightly more subtle ones, beautifully printed. There's a sort of trend of matte paper as well. I think you may have started that trend off.
I don't think we can fully claim it, but certainly a certain type of paper stock we've slightly been responsible for in its upsurge.
Yeah. And also a sort of subtlety where there's a kind of large range of things to look at, but it lets you kind of lead in slowly. And a lot of, you know, the sort of really hyper fashion ones. I don't know, I'm going to go off onto a rant here, but, you know, they just invade you with this sort of, it's like watching MTV almost, the sort of fashion equivalent of it. So I'm certainly not ruling out fashion magazine. I like sort of beautiful fashion, and there's some of the magazines that I love have both, but I like stories as well. So again, I've ruled out magazines if they don't tell me anything about the world.
Right. So you're starting there with D2, which is the supplement to the Norwegian newspaper Dagens Næringsliv, which is, why did you choose that?
I should also
from the fact that you've got a story in it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the other thing is I'm with an agency called Institute, and they represent 20 great photographers. So I also see where their work ends up. So it's not all personal and selfish. D2, I had a story, I did a book called Love Me, and that ended up in D2, and they used it brilliantly on sort of 12 pages. And it was, a lot of it's to do with art direction as well, how they'll lay out a story, and also what kind of story they'll sort of be drawn towards. Mm. This was about the sort of globalization of a beauty ideal, and they handled it with kind of great subtlety, and they didn't sensationalize it, which a lot of other magazines did at the time.
So they just, there was a certain purity the way the art department dealt with it, you think?
Yeah, a sort of real understanding of the story, giving it space, giving it just a sort of dignity to it that it needed. And so I've looked at that magazine since, and it's really come onto my radar.
Mm. If we look at, well, the US market, but also the, you know, the UK market as well, it just, when I see something like D2, it just reminds me that weekend supplements are not what they used to be in this country.
No, I mean, are we going to talk about the weekend supplements?
We can if you want. No, if you want to, because I think when you look at this one, it's, you know, it's a nice format, and there's a certain daringness, and you think this is a small market. I mean, you're talking what is Norway, 5-6 million people.
Yeah,
it's tiny, and of course, incredibly rich country, but that they can afford to do something like this when everyone just talks about cuts in newspapers here.
Yeah, yeah, and let's face it, a lot of the Sunday Saturday supplements have really got very bad. So the ones that have remained good or are good really stand out more and more. I mean, I've just flicked through a few. You know, the FT Weekend magazine, I think, isn't bad. Do you agree with me on that one, or are we going to have?
Well, I can't say because I write for the FT. So
what I find frustrating,
I think it's improved because I wasn't a fan of it before. They've upsized it, which I think they needed to do.
Yeah, the size is nice,
and they've improved the paper quality. Now, I do think it's definitely improved. But, you know, I think that's one where you want some grand reportage. And I think that when I look at D2 from Norway, this is something, I mean, I don't know, this is just, yeah, they, as you said, they let stories breathe a little bit more.
Yeah, and not the obvious stories either. You know, they're looking for interesting takes on things.
Mm.
So I think that's, you know, that's a really nice one. There's another one called Do Magazine, which is Swiss. It's a sort of, they describe it as a culture magazine. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah.
But again, really nicely, beautifully printed, and really nice size and a sort of feel. And that's the other thing that I started thinking about is that, you know, in this sort of digital world where all the magazines are panicking about losing readers and everything going to online, for me, I think the magazines that are clever are the ones that have understood that a sort of tactile feel is really important. And funnily enough, some of the big magazines are turning into kind of books.
Right.
They feel like books. Even the binding and things is more sort of bookish.
I want to go back to what you the Love Me book that you did. That came out. That came out when?
The book came out in 2010. So
right.
Last year.
So and this when is that copy of D2? Is it recent or is it one that's been hanging around for a while?
Probably about 9 months ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because when you do a book like that and then a magazine like D2, I guess, syndicates it, I guess it's two things. I mean, are you driving people to purchase the book or no? You just want your work seen?
Yeah, there comes a point with photography books in particular, they're so non-profit making
right.
that it's more about reaching an audience. And also, that book had a kind of message. I had something to say.
Mm.
So I wanted to get it out there. And you spend a lot of money producing a book. It was a 5-year project. I visited 18 different countries. In the end, you lose all sight about the money. It just becomes a kind of obsessive project.
Right.
And then you want to get it out there, really. And if it fuels the selling of books, then all well and good.
Do you know, you were looking at, we gave you Elephant, and we also gave you a Garage in there, which I don't know if you've seen the...
Yeah, I've just been looking through
this issue of Garage, which, you know, you can't have sort of enough gimmicks in print as well today, which is there's sort of a tattooed butterfly on the front cover, which is sort of magnetically stripped and you can sort of, you know, pull it off. And so just for people who haven't seen this is the fall winter issue. There's a rather, I would say, shaved woman, just her sort of torso and the tops of her legs. And then you pull the butterfly off and it's she has a butterfly tattoo on her crotch.
Yeah,
which I guess this is something which is this the type of magazine that you were sort of referring to earlier, which gets up your nose, maybe?
Well, I have to be honest. I've only just been flicking it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've looked at it for five minutes.
First reaction.
First reaction is huge, it's heavy, and it's too much. Mm. It is just too much. I quite like that cover gimmick, actually.
Right.
And I'm not saying there aren't things that are fascinating in it, but it's overwhelming. I just it's not something that I was wanted to carry around with me.
Gillian, do you think there's a certain utility that magazines have to have? And I think Zed makes a really good point that you, at a certain point, they really sort of transcend being a magazine anymore, and they're an album or they're a statement piece, and that maybe there almost needs to be rules as to, you know, what constitutes being a magazine today.
Well, I mean, when we look at half these magazines around the table, they're almost like books, and I agree. A magazine, you do want it to be something you can carry with you. But when you say you go on rants, what I go on rants is when a lot of the supplements and magazines get redesigned. And because they think they have to compete with the digital apps, they go crazy with their graphics. Yeah. And you can't find the story. It doesn't tell a logical story. And that's what I like about the D2. It's just very clearly laid out. But the graphics, they have to change the color. They have to make it look like handwriting. And it's like they really have to pretend they are the moving media, and they're not.
Yeah. And maybe that's going to end up being a huge own goal, because you're trying to compete with something that's, you know, destroying you. So why try and mimic it and sort of ape it? Why not go the opposite way?
Mm.
And that's why I think the same with photography. People complain about, you know, where's great documentary photography ending up? And I think it has to be done better. You can't compete with the news media delivering kind of quick stories.
Right.
You have to do it beautifully or in depth. Or with great sort of,
and I think you have to understand why people are going to a magazine. It's because they don't want the moving image. They might like it for certain times of the day, but then when they go to a magazine, it's because they want something still, and they want to contemplate something.
Exactly.
Last night we were talking to the newspaper designer Mario Garcia. He joined us on the Monocle Daily last night, and he was in Kuala Lumpur, and he's just redesigned and given an overhaul to the Straits Times of Singapore of Kuala Lumpur, I should say. And he said they did something really simple with the newspaper, which is they'd actually just indexed it. And they worked with a Swedish company called Tolerance, which he said had never been done in newspaper publishing before.
Right.
So where, you know, it would be sort of cut in like a phone directory used to be.
Okay.
And he said, you know, it's completely new technology. And so it's amazing at a time, as you're saying, Julian, that when everyone is trying to, you know, come up with sort of, you know, the latest layout trick. You know, one of the things they thought was just relevant is, okay, if you want to get straight to sports, if you want to get straight to the culture section, yeah, it's, you know, it's index and it takes you straight there. You know, and when everyone else is just trying to figure, you know, well, how can, you know, we do 1,000 different things with our app?
Yeah.
Are you app-tastic right now?
Not really. I've sort of resisted it to a certain extent.
Oh, you surprised me, Zed.
I know, I'm going to sound like a real Luddite, aren't I?
No, it's fine. We've resisted it too. I mean, we have, obviously, to listen to this service, there's an app because it makes sense for mobile devices.
Yeah.
But I think had this project not come about, I don't think we were still trying to justify why should Monocle have an app?
Mm.
And this really prompted it because, well, there is utility to it. You know, if you want to listen to it, okay, fine. Then you know, you need something then for your mobile device. But otherwise, I mean, even, you know, we're still not doing anything on the iPad.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not anti it. In fact, I know that I'll end up getting one. And I know that, you know, it will impact the way I read other things. But having...
Or it may not. I mean.
Yeah. I mean, and I will end up sounding like a Luddite, but there is, and it's a cliche, but there is something great about paper and flicking a magazine. And I don't think it will just change.
Mm.
That won't go away. But as iPads get better and better, they are more and more attractive.
Well, I was saying, you know, we have the app, but it's interesting. Some of the comments are still about the beauty of radio. And someone was commenting, great, Monocle has an app, but radio is the new black. Everyone's loving the fact that we're going back to radio.
Exactly. And also, it's almost like back to front. As the kind of technology gets faster and faster and more gimmicky, suddenly you hear a radio station and it's calm and sort of intelligent. And it's like, oh, it's like an oasis that you swim towards and it stands out. So as everything else changes, you know, the few people that do it well become kind of masters of the art, really.
Yeah. What were you going to say? Sorry.
No, ahead. I was going to point out this other magazine. I kind of fell in love with that
Snap.
One, actually.
Yeah. Which is interesting that it's free.
It's Canadian, isn't it?
It's, I'm just going to check. And it's got... where is it from?
It says, I flicked it outside and it did say...
Yeah, it's from, well, it says it's Montreal. It's Montreal based. No, it's... I mean, there's a lot of advertising in it, but there's a wonderful... You know, you talked about that the feeling of being sort of on matte paper stock. I also like that it's of a nice format. This sort of passes the test for me because there's a portability to it. It's saddle stitched, it's stapled, which is nice. Mm-hmm. So it gives it a certain immediacy as well. And I think that's important too. I mean, some people sort of forget about also the immediacy of magazines, that they need to feel, not that they were just printed, that they're hot off the press, but there's a certain urgency to them.
Mm.
And yeah. And I think that has, you want to pick it up. It's going to tell me something new, I think.
Yeah.
There's always that thrill. You keep going back to your newsagent and you see the same issue. And you just wait for that month to turn when the fresh cover's on for the next issue. And then you think the rewards.
Do you have one like that? You know, is there a magazine?
There are a number, but I love Côte Sud, the French magazine, which is...
I love Côte Sud as well, but that's one which has also suffered from just, you know, they've changed the paper stock. Mm. I think they demand that every single photographer... shoots on digital, and then they have no money for, I think, doing any post production. Mm. So it all looks really, really. When I look at my old copies of Côte Sud, I really hold on to them, and they're just, you know, because they take you to the Mediterranean, they take you to North Africa. They're beautiful, and you go through. You think, okay, you know, where would I live? You know, would I have a
and
place?
And there's very sensual photography.
But it's not as I don't know. It's not as strong as it used to be.
And Is it Bezance? Bezance, the Lebanese magazine that sort of keeps quite true to the...
Yeah, it's... I don't know. We've talked about it a lot. I think that sometimes I feel like, you know, with film before, you shoot a lot of film, you do like a little bit of retouching. But now it's like, you know, you just get 8 zillion images from photographers when they come in. And then the amount of post-production that has to... or there's a special word for it. It's not even post-production, but... what are they called?
Airbrushing,
which to me always like digital capturing, which sounds like all of these things, like these butterflies have come out of a bag and you've got to sort of run around for 4 days to capture them. And that's where you pay these stupid day rates. Thinking, what the hell are you capturing?
Tyler, I'm not going to get into this on air. You know my feelings.
It's like every agent has sort of thought of a way to sort of, how do you sting the magazine?
Well, the funny thing is actually that you're digging your own grave on this one because... the idea of paying for post-production is what isn't happening now. And so what you are getting is like thousands of digital images, badly edited, badly retouched. And the images in magazines, it suffers and it shows. Mm. And it's all cost-cutting.
Yeah.
And if you get people that shoot on film, they tend to take a lot more care about what they're doing. And if you shoot on digital well and you really work on the images properly, that also shows. So anyway, let's nip that one in the bud, because otherwise
and well,
it's
listen,
get ugly.
I was going to say we're the last ones who are cutting on that. You know that we're still shooting a lot on film.
I know.
What do you shoot on?
Well, I shoot mostly on medium format cameras.
But there's higher margins if you capture lots of images, a lot of digital
capture. Tyler has an absolute obsession with this digital capture, but I'm going to steer
you
back to...
But Jillian, when you see the invoices, it's always like, oh my goodness. Anyway, we'll talk about
that. But it is interesting what you're saying, because there is an incredible drive to cut corners and save money in magazines. And that's happening. I think it's a combination of the economic situation, also the sort of digital revolution where you can save money. And if you can, people just can't resist it.
Yeah.
And that does impact on the final product. So, you know, for people like me who do sort of long-term projects and in more in-depth sort of stories and projects and ideas, it's getting harder and harder to get people to finance those things.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why these kind of looking for good magazines is important.
Jillian's got a copy of the massive new Magnum book.
I'm cheating. I know this was meant to be the magazine review, but this was published this week and I couldn't resist. It's the Magnum Contacts book. It's this tome of analyzing all the contact sheets of some of the most iconic photographers in the world. And I think the beauty of it is you see the editing process. When you look at the contact sheets, you see very much the process of taking the image. And I think I did want to read out to you a lovely quote from Cartier-Bresson about the beauty of contact sheets. And he says, pulling a good picture out of a contact sheet is like going down to the cellar and bringing back a good bottle of wine to share.
Very French.
But just to set the book up a little bit more, so they show these iconic images that, you know, that we would know from the Magnum agency. And then, as you said, Julian, then either on sort of a facing page or following pages, then it does show the editing process that went into it. And it's funny, when contact sheets do come into the office, still, Zed, it's just there's this wonderful sort of sense of being able to, you know, to go through them, you know, in a way which is, I don't know, it's just much more interesting. And it goes back to the tactility, as you were saying before, of just,
yeah,
you know, being able to, God, get the China marker out again and circle them.
I mean, I was in South Sudan last month and I shot 100 rolls of film, completely destroying any profit I could have ever made out of that particular project.
Right.
But coming home and editing them and, you know, sitting on my balcony in the sun and actually editing outdoors, which is what I do if the weather's good enough, is better than just sort of sitting for hours and hours on a computer.
Who are you in South Sudan for?
I went there. It was my own project and I pitched it to three magazines, The Guardian Weekend, which came out last weekend, and D Magazine in Italy, which is another good magazine, actually. And they use interesting stories. They lay them out really well. I think it's coming out, actually, it came out yesterday.
Indeed.
Yeah. And it's part of La Repubblica newspaper. And they've given it 12 pages and a cover. So that's great. And Das Magazine as well.
Which is great.
Switzerland.
Yeah. It's the Saturday supplement to Tagesanzeiger.
Yeah.
Great magazine.
And they've done a great layout.
So that's already been out as well in Switzerland.
That was out last weekend.
Excellent.
Yeah, so, and they did a really nice job.
Time for more. Looks like you've got a nice issue of Esquire there.
Ah, Russian Esquire.
Oh, that's Russian. Because I thought it was Spanish, because I like Spanish Esquire. And I think Spanish does a good job, but that's a very handsome looking issue of Esquire.
Yeah, it's a really nice size magazine. I don't know if they're all standardized, the Esquires,
No,
editions.
I think it's a bit of a mixed bag.
They came onto my radar because, again, they published Love Me, my project, and they did it on 16 pages with no ads in between, which for a project like this is really important, because if you sort of put a ridiculous ad in the middle of it, it sort of changes everything. So full bleed images, just page after page of kind of, you know, no silly crops, no gimmicks, and they've used a lot of other stories in that way. So
excellent.
They're one to watch as well.
Zed Nelson, we're at the top of the hour almost, which means it's goodbye.
Okay.
But we're going to see that. Thank you very much for that. That's all for this Saturday edition of the Saturday Review here on Monocle 24. Tomorrow, I'm back with my colleagues, Andrew and Rob, for the weekly, but it's going to be news time next for all of us here. It's goodbye from our Kasipi, Gillian Tobias, and me. News is next.